Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. London police say that a number of pedestrians were injured in a vehicle incident Saturday near the city's Natural History Museum. Police said a man has been detained in connection with that incident and that the cause was under investigation. He was detained after British media reported a car had veered onto the pavement outside the museum. Britain is on its second highest security alert level after 5 deadly attacks this year, 3 involving a vehicle. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Tropical Storm Nate has strengthened into a hurricane and is moving toward the central Gulf of Mexico with maximum sustained winds of 130 kilometers an hour. John Bel Edwards is lieutenant governor of the U.S. state of Louisiana, which is being prepped to take the brunt of Nate.
We are monitoring this storm with H hour being 2000 hours or 8 o'clock on Saturday evening, because that's when we need to be ready. Once it gets dark, things are much more difficult, and so we're asking people to make sure that they are fully ready and prepared where they want to be and in the proper posture by 8 o'clock on Saturday night.
President Donald Trump is expected to decertify the Iran nuclear agreement next week, but stopped short of completely scrapping the deal. The White House press secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders explaining the president's decision-making process.
What I can tell you is the president isn't looking at one piece of this. He's looking at all of the bad behavior of Iran, not just the nuclear deal as bad behavior, but the ballistic missile testing, destabilizing of the region, number one state sponsor of terrorism, cyber attacks, illicit nuclear program.
The move would launch a 60-day period during in which Congress must decide whether to impose all of the economic sanctions. This is VOA News. The U.S. government and private sector analysts believe that the next ballistic missile launch by North Korea could come within a few days. The next rocket launch could be another nuclear-capable medium-range missile or two-staged version, giving the missile a longer and intercontinental range. Russian media have quoted a lawmaker in Moscow saying North Korea is preparing for a test able to reach the west coast of the United States. Las Vegas police say that they still have no motive for the shooter, who killed at least 58 people and wounded hundreds more at an outdoor country music concert earlier this week. One of the investigators told police and reporters that they're still searching for clues to why Stephen Paddock fired repeatedly from the window of the hotel casino onto the concert venue. The U.S. Department of Justice has announced the indictment of 3 men charged with participating in an international plot to carry out terrorist attacks in New York City. The U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York said Friday in a news release that it has charged a 19-year-old Canadian citizen, a 19-year-old Pakistani, and a 37-year-old Philippine citizen. Australian investigators have released their latest report into the missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, saying it's almost inconceivable the aircraft has not been found. The Boeing 777 disappeared in March of 2014 while flying to Beijing from Kuala Lumpur with 239 people on board. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Investigators in Australia have said their understanding of MH370's whereabouts was better now than it's ever been, but they still don't know why it crashed. In its final report into the mystery, the Australian Transport Safety Bureau said it was almost inconceivable and certainly unacceptable that an aircraft could simply vanish in an era when 10 million passengers board commercial flights every day.
The U.S. military says a 4th American soldier has been killed during an attack this week in Niger. A military official said that the soldier went missing after a deadly ambush on a joint U.S.-Niger patrol. 3 other U.S. soldiers were already confirmed dead after the attack earlier in the week. The World Health Organization reports that 900,000 doses of oral cholera vaccine are expected to arrive in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, Saturday. A mass vaccination campaign for Rohingya refugees is set to begin Tuesday. More than 500,000 Rohingya refugees who have fled violence in Myanmar since August 25th are at risk of getting cholera. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
Up to 30 Mali militia attack MONUSCO base in Libero, in the North Kivu province of the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Forces from the United Nations mission in the DRC repel attacks from rebels.
If we are successful in the 17 SDGs, we will have a very prosperous continent. So my role in this position is to make the case for science, but more importantly, to make the case for investment.
The president of Mauritius outlines plans to improve the living conditions of citizens.
During the National Consultative Conference on the Constitutional Reform, it was unanimously resolved by the National Convention that we must be able to set the two-term limit.
And Zambians demand term limits for all elected public officials. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Forces from the United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or MONUSCO, repelled attacks from militia fighters in the eastern part of the country Friday. The attacks left two of the fighters dead and two peacekeepers slightly wounded. Florence Marshall, a spokesperson from MONUSCO, says injuries sustained by soldiers from the UN force are not life-threatening. To learn more about the latest rebels' attack, I reached MONUSCO spokesperson Marshall in the Congolese capital, Kinshasa.
Up to 30 Mai-Mai militia attack MONUSCO base in Libero, in the North Kivu province of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So MONUSCO responded immediately to the attack, and as a result, two Mai-Mai elements were killed and two others were wounded. The two injured Mai-Mai elements will be evacuated to Goma in the course of the day. And at the same time, two MONUSCO peacekeepers sustained light injuries.
So the injuries are not life-threatening for the MONUSCO troops, correct?
Yes, for the MONUSCO troops, it's only light injuries.
There have been reports of recent spike in violence in part of the areas that MONUSCO helps the government to protect civilians. How is MONUSCO dealing with this following these attacks?
So it's true that we have got reports on repeated clashes between armed groups and the Congolese army, the FARDC, this last week. And as you know, MONUSCO is in the Congo in order for two things. And one thing is to protect civilians. Another thing is to help the implementation of the 31st December agreement. So regarding this particular case, it's in the scope of our mandate of the protection of civilians.
How are you reassuring the population of protecting them, which is within your mandate, following these spikes of clashes that you alluded to?
I don't know if you are aware, but last week there were also big clashes between Mai-Mai Yakatumba and the Congolese army in another part of the Congo, in Uvira, and MONUSCO really intervened in order to prevent the spread of the violence and in order to keep the big city of Uvira safe. So we deployed attack helicopters, and our contribution was really key in order to avoid an escalation of violence. So it's the way we can ensure the population whenever we can, of course, provided we have available resources, which is not obvious these days because, as you may know, there is a reduction in our budget. But every time we are aware that there is civil population are threatening by armed groups, we intervene because, again, it's our mandate.
What is the level of cooperation recently between the Congolese army and MONUSCO in some of these areas where clashes have spiked recently?
So, for instance, in Uvira, it was not a joint operation. We have agreements with the Congolese army and we carry on joint operations, but this joint operation really fall into, again, agreements between MONUSCO and the Congolese army. But under our mandate of the protection of civilians, MONUSCO can really operate on its own.
Florence Marshall is a spokesperson for the United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, MONUSCO. She spoke with me from Kinshasa. The president of Mauritius, Amina Gurib Fakim, is a scientist and businesswoman. Those roles shape her work as one of just two female heads of state in Africa. She will be the only female head of state after Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's final term expires in January. My colleague Abdul Shakur Aboud from the VOA Swahili service sat with President Gurib Fakim and began by asking her about how Africa can bridge the scientific research gap with the developed world.
You're right in saying that if you look at the health sector, already Africa is 15% of humanity, the world population, but we already have 25% of the disease burden. And what we need to do is keep on investing in science, technology and innovation, because this will underwrite our SDGs. And if you look at the SDGs, they're all systems, and if we are successful in the 17 SDGs, we will have a very prosperous continent. So my role in this position is to make the case for science, and but more importantly, to make the case for investment, because we should not forget that Africa has a youth dividend. But this youth dividend can also become a big problem if we don't marshal in the right tools, the right funding, the right infrastructure for them to make a difference on the continent. And by addressing all these needs, we will also make an impact in migration.
When the Green Revolution started, Africa was left behind, mm-hmm. Asia went far away, and now you have the internet and the technology revolution. How do you see bringing that together to make it Africa work? Why is it not working for Africa, you think?
You rightly pointed out the Green Revolution has been successful in Asia and also to some extent Latin America. If we look at the African continent, we've got 60% of arable land, which is, of course, 60% of the world arable land is in Africa. Why is Africa suffering so much in terms of food security? I think a lot of it is because African agriculture is rain-fed. And now what we're witnessing is a disruption of the climate change. So this will be impacted. And it is also a given that if you improve by 1 or 2% in agricultural productivity, you will remove 40 to 50 million people out of absolute poverty. So we need to relook at this sector. We need to marshal in the technology, because if you increasingly see the Maasai warriors, for example, now instead of having a spear, they will have a mobile phone. So this will be a very, very powerful tool for transmitting the right information. And already, technology is making a big impact already, for example, in a country like Kenya, through the M-Pesa, where people are becoming bankable through an app. I think this mobile telephony and technology, they are very, very important tools to make a dent in the transmission of the appropriate data, the appropriate knowledge, and more importantly, get the women empowered in Africa, because we must not be coy about it to say that women feed Africa.
So for you as a woman, the first Mauritian president under the Republic Constitution, what made you move from a scientist to become a politician?
Well, I can safely say I'm an accidental president. Because As I said, I had two lives before this life. I was an academic and I was an entrepreneur. I translated my academic research work into a business. But when the election came up in 2014, they wanted a neutral kind of figure, politically neutral, because the position of the president is apolitical. So I salute these politicians for having taken a political decision to appoint an apolitical person to a political post. And I suppose the fact that I was a woman and neutral politically, had some of credibility through the sciences, I suppose I was the right face to put forward. And it was one of the rare occasions where the name of the president was flagged during a campaign. And so I can safely say I was voted in. When people voted, they knew that at some point they would have this woman as president.
Amina Gurib Fakim is the president of Mauritius. She spoke with my colleague Abdul Shakur Aboud from the VOA Swahili service in Washington, D.C. A cross-section of Zambians have petitioned the Speaker of the National Assembly demanding a debate in Parliament seeking to restrict all elected officials to two terms. Isaac Mwanza, governance advisor at the Young African Leaders Initiative and a lead advocate for the two-term limit, says there's need for fresh ideas in how the country is governed. The demand is receiving a mixed reaction as some political parties announced their support or opposition to the proposed measure. Isaac Mwanza told me that since the constitution restricts a Zambian president to 2 5-4-year terms, the same rule should also be applicable to parliamentarians and other elected officials.
Zambian citizens have been talking about this move for quite a longer period of time. During the National Consultative Conference on the Constitutional Reform, it was unanimously resolved by the National Convention that we must be able to set the two-term limit for councillors and members of parliament and all elected positions. And the reason is simple, is that when new ideas come into these offices, they will come with an active agenda. To allow people not to overstay in offices, and when they overstay in offices, we know what has been the result of overstaying. So the Zambian citizens have barely said, we have limited the presidential term and the term for the mayors and the council chairpersons to 2 terms of 5 years each. Now, why aren't we limiting the term of office also, as we had resolved in the National Convention, to a 2-term for councillors and members of parliament, so that we can have fresh ideas in parliament, in the councils, because we believe that leadership is not a privilege of a few people.
Some are of the opinion that with the legislators and other elected officials, they would have the needed experience in order to formulate very good laws, since people in their constituencies voted for them anyway.
That is an argument that has been used for quite a longer period of time. We can use the same argument on the offices that we have limited to 2 terms. For instance, we have limited the position of a mayor and the council chairperson to 2 terms. These are also voted by the people in a district, across the district. The president is also voted by the people across the country. And so if we want to use one argument, this argument must be able to apply to all elective positions.
What you are asking for, and other citizens are asking for now, is a constitutional amendment. What are the prospects to have some of these demands that you are making to be realized with these constitutional amendments that you seek?
It is very possible to realize this. The constitution itself has given our citizens the mandate to petition them, to initiate legislation, to suggest amendments to the constitution or any other law. So Article 88 of our constitution has allowed citizens to do that. And why we're optimistic that this is going to pass is that we are not targeting at any member of parliament, we are not targeting at any existing councillor, we are simply targeting the future. So people are going to understand that they can only serve for 2 terms and afterwards they would have to leave. So to us, this is a decision that is meant for the future, and I think it is good for the country, and we believe in our members of parliament that they are going to rise above their partisan interest or self-interest to ensure that they can debate a motion that is going to come before the National Assembly.
So who is funding this move?
The citizens themselves are funding it. And I'm very glad to tell you that as a lead petitioner, these are things that we have discussed as citizens at different fora. And so there is nobody who's behind it except the citizens themselves, who have realized that it is important to have an honest debate on this issue of the term limit.
Well, this, some people are saying, is against what they call career politicians, and that you are limiting their constitutional right to belong and to be voted for by curtailing their constitutional right to represent.
The position is clear, is that if you are able to limit the term of office for an elected official, such as a council chairperson who is also elected by the people, it is a constitutional right to represent a district. It is a constitutional right for the president, for any president, to represent their country if the people want them to do that. But what we have learned is that democracy comes with certain limitations. If those limitations are accepted by the people, they become part and parcel of it. Democracy is not about copy and paste. We must be able to come up with our own system that will better our own governance, that will allow more young people to be groomed for leadership, so that we do not have the same people that are going to participate in the governance of the country on the basis that they have money which they can use to be voted into office. And you need to understand that Zambian politics is about money. Whoever has the money wins the vote, nobody gets the day. Whoever has the money within the party also gets to win the adoption.
Isaac Mwanza is a governance advisor at the Zambian Young African Leaders Initiative. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The United States has expressed concern about the deterioration in the political environment in Kenya in advance of the October 26 presidential election. A State Department statement cautions political actors on all sides who have in recent weeks undermined the Electoral Commission and stoked tensions. Peter Olingo is a consultant at the Institute of Security Studies who specializes in democratic governance, human rights, elections, and electoral processes. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him by phone in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, and began by asking him how concerned he was about the deterioration in the political environment.
Of course, it concerns everybody, not just me. Stakeholders are concerned, particularly those who are concerned with peace, an environment where, you know, rule of law and respect for human rights exist. All of us are, in fact, concerned.
Under this environment, do you see the rerun coming off smoothly?
It's still not assured whether this will come on smoothly, because there are still a lot of contentions on the table that are being pushed back and forth by the political class, you know. So we still await to see developments this week in terms of progress that will be made in terms of reaching political consensus over some of the outstanding contentious issues. So as of now, you know, one of the political side has called for mass demonstrations twice a week, every week, you know, which they began 2 weeks ago. And they have insisted that this will go on until some of the demands that they put on the table are met, you know. So the confrontational environment that has been taking shape is what worries a lot of us, and what now creates an atmosphere of extreme uncertainty.
Given Kenya's position in the region, where the other neighboring countries don't seem to be faring any better in as far as governance is concerned, what's the impact in the whole region?
But this is, of course, a matter of concern, and this is being looked at very closely in the entire region. As you are right, you've rightly pointed out, the region hasn't fared well in terms of consolidating electoral democracy. But you see, they are also equally concerned about the violence that may erupt in case it does. You recall 2007-2008, when the entire region was affected by the violence that occurred after the elections in 2007. So these are the fears that the region has, and they are therefore watching Kenya's face very closely. They are also keen to see the developments as well in terms of how Kenya will
manage this, because a better management that creates better results for the region is something for the region to emulate, copy, and that would be a plus. So if it is not managed well, that will also be something that will have an impact, a negative impact, on the progress of electoral democracy in the region. You recall when the Supreme Court nullified the elections, there was quite a lot of excitement in the region in terms of the maturity and the show and the passion of independence of the judiciary that could go to influence how the judiciary in the region works, you know. So these are some of the concerns that I believe are coming out of the region in the context of the developments in Kenya.
Talking of managing the election, given the time that's left, it's less than 3 weeks, do you think the concerned political groups will resolve their issues before then?
Well, we hope they would, really, because if they don't, then it's extremely uncertain what will happen, whether the elections will happen or not, you know. Because one side has said if their demands are not met, there will be new elections. So what that means is still unclear, whether that means completely plunging the country into violence is still not known. And so that is why we still make an appeal to the protagonists to have a sense of dialogue and a sense of negotiating and talking together to reach some consensus. Already the IEBC is making some progress in terms of providing a platform where the two sides can talk and negotiate and come to certain mutual understanding on how best to manage the upcoming elections. So our appeal and hope is that some sense will prevail, some wise counsel will prevail, so that we have peace.
Peter Alingo is a consultant at the Institute of Security Studies. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Nairobi. Winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICAN, says it is honored to be recognized for the work it has done to open a pathway to a nuclear-free world. The group, a coalition of non-governmental organizations in 100 countries, was instrumental in bringing to fruition the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
ICAN's singular achievement, the Nuclear Ban Treaty, was adopted July 7th by 122 countries, despite universal opposition from the world's nuclear weapons states. The treaty will go into force when ratified by 50 countries. Executive Director of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, Beatrice Finn, says the Nobel Peace Prize is a tribute to the tireless effort of millions of concerned people worldwide who work to banish this destructive weapon from the face of the earth. She adds the award also is a tribute to the survivors of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombings and to the victims of nuclear test explosions in securing this landmark agreement.
The treaty categorically outlaws the worst weapon of mass destruction and established a clear pathway for their total elimination. It is a response to the ever-deepening concern of the international community that any use of nuclear weapons would inflict catastrophic, widespread, and long-lasting harm.
Finn calls the belief by some governments that nuclear weapons are an essential source of security misguided and dangerous. She says this only leads to proliferation and undermines disarmament. In response to a question from VOA, Nobel laureate Finn says it would be unfortunate if the United States were to tear up the nuclear arms deal with Iran. She says Iran is in compliance with the terms of the treaty, and the treaty needs to remain and be supported. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
We used to sit down, talk about big things. You had big dreams, yeah. You're talking money, fame, and power, vibing every midnight hour. You used to tell me, say, my brother, you be family. I beg, make you no trust in nobody. Say, make I put my trust in the Most High. And if I put in work, then I'm gonna fly. I wish they still did my side, oh. Real ones like you hard to find, oh.
I'm out here putting in work.
To your family, I fulfill your dreams. Your little girl don't turn a queen. Your young boy self done the kinging. Be rest assured, God deep on the scene. You got me, never forgotten. Never forget. I remember I live a backstage for Abuja. Now from room we didn't call me.
Yeah, something happened to mommy.
Waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting.
Oh.
She mommy don't go so.
Yeah.
God damn. I know she's smiling down on me. I know she's up there praying for me. Sometimes when it gets lonely, ma, I wish you could call me. Hey, ma, see your baby boy made it. Thankful for all that you taught me.
Oh,
and the way that you loved me.
Love.
Wish you were here, I miss you. In your garden, I forgot.
I miss you, ma.
That's why I sing this one to the homies we lost, loved ones we lost.
To you,
I dedicate this one to the homies we lost, loved ones we lost. To you, missing someone.
I was scared to jump on this song because I thought I didn't have the words. But it's funny. When you speak about the pain is when you realize how much it hurts. They say that time heals all, but I realize that only love does. So let's live for the ones that love us still. Tomorrow isn't guaranteed. Do it for my unborn, do it for the family. Your mama told me life's deep. Recognize a real one, trying to save your energy. Live your life, homie. Last time I checked, I don't think we get a second. Life needs ginger, savor every second. God, not forgotten, that's a given. Hold on to big dreams of future that could be. Cause sometimes the good things like your love are buried in you. Hold on to big dreams of future could be. Cause truth is your love is forever with you.
Diamond platinum,
yeah.
And mahogany heritage.
Want to be conscious
for all the ladies, yeah.
Ah, atakila la na nyota, najitambara mwezi kisa na nyota. Animkande amechoka, nitembe na ulimi kote kanyoka.
Mapenzi niongeze.
Hallelujah. Yes, she makes me
the denge, denge. I know the post, eh. My baby, give me biscuit. I want the sugar. The things you do me. But your barrel, go share we. Borrow barrel, borrow barrel, go share so. Melo, 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 la fewi. Melo, 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 la fe so. Ani melo, 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 la fewi. Melo, melo. Melo melo la fesso eyin fujo wo eyin menu apon be kore mi akankan igile yan gba mi nigba ko so nigba ko so la nigba ko so ro taye ro mi pin you stood by me. I know I made some mistakes but I don't regret. Now I know go forget the cherish waiting I get the very first day we met. Told you how I felt, I like you had a melt. My baby, you're the best. I know the denge, denge. I know the post, eh. My baby, give me biscuit. I want the sugar. The things you do me. But your barrel, koshe we. Boru barrel, boru barrel, koshe so. Melo, 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 la fe we. Melo, 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 la fe so. Ani melo, melo. Melo melo la fewi, melo melo, melo melo la fesa. For better, for worse, for richer, for poor. To sell on me wrong, I feel what it come. Ni ba ti mo wasu, ti mo squad ti takule. Si mo dani kanja bata, ti mo fese shalabule. She be wallowing me, and show me love regardless. Your mother ladies. Them know they send me a I know you make some mistakes. Now you don't regret. Now you know go forget to cherish waiting you get. I know the denge, denge. I know the post, eh. My baby give me biscuit. I want the sugar. The things you do me. But your barrel, go share we. Borrow barrel, borrow barrel, go share so. Melo, 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 la fewi. Melo melo, melo melo la fesso. Ani melo melo, melo melo la fewi. Melo melo, melo melo la fesso. Isu parada odiyan, agbado parada odeko, agbado parada odolowo, ma mi parada odibus. Iwo nikan, iwo, iwo nikan so so. Afi iwo nikan so 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 so, iwo nikan so so. Ewo. I know the post, eh. My baby, give me biscuit. I want the sugar. The things you do me. But your barrel, go share we. Boru barrel, boru barrel, go share so. Melo, 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 la fewi. Melo, 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 la fe so. Ani melo, 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 la fewi. Melo, 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 la fe so. Because today I want to jolly. She dey make me feel like spend my money. Chuku go zimba sing for me. In a memory jim jim jim. From January to December so so key. After our wedding Obodo Oyinbo. Straight. Baby come make we chill. This loving is for real. You and I. Only you and I. I ain't get where we move. When we quit you ma. Cause a man that find that a wife has found a very good thing. Why your ma? So hold my hand. Oh yeah, make me dance. I should celebrate in advance. I don't tell your number one fan. So hold my hand. Oh yeah, make me dance. I should celebrate in advance. I don't tell your number one fan. Can you not done that? Not bad talky. Because today I want to jolly. She didn't make me feel like to spend my money.
kuga zemba simfurugi. In a memory jim jim jim. From January to December so so ki. After our wedding we go blow it go. Straight. My baby make you know the way. No chere cambia. Let us celebrate this love way we dey share. My darling, tell me how you want it. Today now your day. Me, I go dance with you well, you, cause you don't make my day. Baby, rule, baby, you will be my lady. Baby, rule, baby, you will be my baby. Baby, rule, baby, you will be my lady. Baby, rule, baby, you will be my. Can you not dance? Tabataki. Oga Badenda, where the NSC? Because today, I want to jolly. She didn't make me feel like to spend my money. Chuku go zemba sing for me. In a memory, jim jim jim. From January to December, so so after our wedding, we go do it go. Straight.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. And now returning to news on Kenya, the United States and the European Union have warned against attempts by the political class to undermine the Kenyan upcoming October 26 presidential election rerun. They express concern that heated pronouncements against the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, could weaken its credibility to organize the poll. In a statement released Friday, they expressed worry about proposed changes to election regulations, with the EU saying such modifications should not be carried out. For the latest development about the election, Professor Peter Anyang Nyong'o, the Kisumu governor, joins me live via telephone link up. Hello, Governor Nyong'o.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. You have so many titles, I don't know which one to call you. Which title should I give you?
Just call me Governor Nyong'o, that's okay.
Okay, Governor Nyong'o. So what's your reaction about the EU and the US statement regarding the harsh rhetoric both your party, the NASA coalition, and the Jubilee ruling coalition uttering against the IEBC?
I think the European envoys are getting something completely wrong. One, that the Jubilee going to Parliament to change laws is completely a different move from our stand. Our stand comes from the case we took to the Supreme Court petitioning against the election of Uhuru Kenyatta on the August 8th election on the grounds that the elections were not conducted according to the Constitution and according to electoral law. The Supreme Court upheld our opinion and passed a majority judgment to the extent that the election on the 8th of August was not held according to the Constitution and the electoral laws, and directed the IEBC to organize elections within 60 days in accordance with the Constitution and electoral laws, as indeed we had petitioned in court. Now, the court also said that there were definitely people who were culpable in sins of omission and commission in the election within the IEBC, but that was the responsibility of the commission to put his house in order before the election and not the court. Now, we have demanded that the IEBC undertake those necessary reforms before the elections on the 26th of October. The IEBC has been intransigent, A, in obeying the court order, and in B, in undertaking a necessary reforms before the elections on the 26th of October.
Now, Governor Nyong'o, do you and the opposition NASA coalition have confidence in the Wafula Chibukati-led IEBC to organize a credible election this time around?
We don't have confidence that Chibukati Chinoba IEBC, provided it so long as it does not take the necessary reforms that are required, we have no confidence in it.
So what,
if it undertakes those reforms that the Supreme Court demanded, and if it gets rid of the officials who committed the crimes during the elections and undermined the constitution and electoral laws, if it doesn't get rid of those officials, then that definitely we cannot have confidence in it.
So what are the irreducible minimums for the NASA coalition?
And we said the following. One, grosso modo, the Electoral Commission should implement the Supreme Court decision. But in particular, the Supreme Court should do the following. One, and not the Supreme Court, the Electoral Commission should do the following. One, get rid of the officials who are responsible for the mistakes that were committed on the 8th of August. Indeed, Chairman Chebukati himself has agreed with us, and indeed did come out with a list of the officials that needed to leave before the election. But these officials in the IEBC were disobedient to their chairman, have stayed put, including Kinoba himself. And this kind of impunity is what is undermining the integrity of the Electoral Commission. And you would not like the integrity of the Electoral Commission to be undermined by its own officials. That's one. Secondly, we have also said that when it comes to returning officers, there are two parties, together with the IEBC, should vet those officials, the returning officers, and ensure that the returning officers who are going to manage the elections on the 26th of October are those who will not make the same mistakes as those who did manage the election on the 8th of August. Thirdly, it is important that the IEBC does not engage Al Ghurair to print the ballot papers, because we know the mistake that Al Ghurair did by printing 2 million extra ballot papers that made it possible for Jubilee to rig the election. Fourthly, the IEBC has gone ahead to sign a contract with Automorpho at a cost way beyond what the IEBC itself has estimated. This is yet another act of corruption, which makes us and the people of Kenya have very little confidence in the IEBC.
Now, Governor Nyong'o Chiloba of the IEBC has been sidelined by the Wafula Chebukati administration. Do you give at least Wafula Chebukati a thumbs up?
What has Chebukati done?
Has sidelined Chiloba.
Not just sidelining Chiloba. Sidelining Chiloba is not enough, because you can sideline him. He is still within the commission, and he will still go ahead and use his powers as CEO to order people around. Sidelining is just a way of saying, okay, stand here. We have said you have sidelined you, but you can come up back at any moment. The effectiveness of sidelining Chiloba, I personally don't understand.
Now, there are suggestions by the Jubilee Coalition seeking electoral reforms ahead of the vote. What are your thoughts, since President Uhuru Kenyatta believes the reforms would strengthen the electoral processes to ensure credibility?
It is not just for President Uhuru Kenyatta to believe. It's for both parties to believe. Because when you are going to an election is like football. The rules of the game must be agreed to both parties. The river must be neutral. You cannot go to an election or to a football game where one side determines what the rules are without the other side concurring. So it's not just a question of Uhuru Kenyatta having confidence in what he has proposed in Parliament. It's for us as NASA also to agree to those reforms.
Now, Governor, the concerns have been raised about the intransigence or uncompromising stance taken by both parties, your party, the National NASA Coalition, and the Jubilee Coalition. How do you bridge the divide to ensure a smooth transition?
This is where the envoys get it wrong. We are the aggrieved party who took our case to the court, and we had grounds for taking our case to court. The Supreme Court held our case, and so the Supreme Court ordered the IEBC to organize the elections on the 26th of October, in line with the recommendation of the Supreme Court that those elections should be carried out in accordance with the Constitution and the electoral laws, and without abrogating the Constitution and the electoral laws as they did on the 8th of August. In the ruling of the Supreme Court, if you look at it, there are very, very specific recommendations of the Supreme Court. And the IEBC seems to be going ahead to go ahead to the election without committing itself to submit to implementing those directives by the Supreme Court. Which directives we ourselves have reduced into some minimum, reducible minimums, and submitted to the IEBC for consideration. Now, you cannot compare our position to that of Jubilee. Jubilee is on the defense because Jubilee itself was culpable in mismanaging the election and benefiting from that mismanagement. And they would like the same mismanagement to prevail on the 26th of October so that they can win. This is something that we have said, no, we are not going to fall to that kind of trick.
Governor Nyong'o, there have been concerns raised about election-related violence. Some critics of the NASA coalition are saying that supporters or partisans of the NASA coalition are to blame for this, because if the status quo remains, then the Jubilee Party basically wins the vote.
What are you saying? You're saying that we are being accused for electoral...
Related violence. Supporters of NASA, yes.
Where?
Well, they are talking in your strongholds.
That there was violence in our stronghold?
Yes, that's what they said.
That violence is essentially committed by the police. How can we be responsible for police action? First of all, when you believe, and we are reason to believe so, actually masterminded the assassination of Chris Musando, the envoys did not seem to condemn that kind of action. Now, that was definitely election-related violence. We have not committed that kind of violence.
Now, last but not the least, Governor Nyong'o, there were breakdowns of talks between the NASA, IEBC, and the Jubilee Coalition. How can this be resolved to find a common ground, an equal playing field, perhaps, in readiness for the election?
That is the responsibility of the IEBC, and that is the responsibility of the interlocutors who have come in to help, like the envoys. If indeed they can help the IEBC bridge the gap and ensure that we can come to a common agreement, we are quite willing to play on.
Thank you very much. That was Professor Peter Anyang Nyong'o, Governor of Kisumu in Kenya. He joined me live via telephone link up here in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the water of the river flows on without waiting for the thirsty man. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply troubled by the September 27th conviction and 2-year prison sentence for Crimean Tatar leader Ilmi Umyerov in Russian-occupied Crimea. Mr. Umyerov was convicted for his opposition to Russia's attempted annexation of Crimea and given a harsher sentence than the Russian occupation prosecutor requested. This compounds past injustices in the case, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, including his confinement for several weeks of punitive psychiatric treatment in 2016. Human Rights Watch condemned this confinement as an egregious violation of his rights. Speaking at his trial, Umyerov said that the charges against him were to punish all who oppose the annexation. He vowed to appeal his sentence all the way to the European Court of Human Rights. Umyerov's lawyer, Nikolai Polozhev, says he fears that the Russian prison system will not be capable of providing proper medical care to Umyerov, who has Parkinson's disease, diabetes, and heart disease. The European Union called Umyerov's sentencing a serious violation of his human rights and another example of persecution of the Crimean Tatar community and a further and clear illustration of the severe deterioration of human rights on the Crimean Peninsula. The Ukrainian government condemned the verdict as an illegal and politically motivated sentence that violated Umyerov's human rights. Umyerov is a deputy chairman of the Majlis, the Crimean Tatars' elected representative body, and has been an outspoken critic of Russia's purported annexation of Crimea and its crackdown on Crimean Tatars. Umyerov's conviction follows similar rulings in Crimea on September 10th against deputy head of the Crimean Tatar Majlis, Akhtem Chihos, and on September 22nd against Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty contributor Mykola Semena. The United States calls on the Russian occupation authorities to immediately release Umyerov and vacate his conviction. Crimea remains an integral part of Ukraine, and the United States remains steadfast in its support for the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.